Polling shows that most men want to become dads someday. But when men are having trouble conceiving, there isn't always as much support for them as women who are struggling to become moms. Not even a lot of research on how not being able to become a dad affects men psychologically. A UW infertility expert joins us now to look at the causes and some of the treatments for male infertility. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Have you or your partner experienced infertility? What was it like? Can you talk about the process of seeking treatment? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Daniel Williams is a professor, a residency program director, and vice chair for education for the Department of Urology at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He specializes in men's infertility and sexual health. Dr. Williams, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks very much for having me today.
How common is infertility for men?
Yeah, it's a great question. We hear a lot about infertility on the female side and for couples in general. It's about 10 to 15% of couples of reproductive age are faced with fertility every year here in the U.S. And what's interesting about that is that although much of the attention is focused on the female side, as men, we can play a part in this problem as well. Sometimes that problem is overlooked, but upwards of about half the time when couples are being evaluated for fertility issues, we find something on the male side that's going on.
I looked, there's a long list of possible causes of male infertility. What are some of the most common ones?
Yeah, it's a great question. Issues on the male side can range from problems with the production of sperm, problems with the delivery of sperm for where it needs to go. Sometimes we find genetic abnormalities that contribute to fertility issues on the male side. But what we're really looking for when we do these evaluations for the male partner is making sure that there's not anything harmful going on, and also to see if there's something we can identify and treat to help that couple improve their fertility chances.
Yeah, what are some of the things that are potentially harmful to a guy who's experiencing infertility, where this is a symptom of something maybe hazardous?
Yeah, great question. Fortunately, it's quite rare that we find something harmful to that man during a fertility evaluations. But some of the things that we find that could be health threatening or even life threatening would be things like testicular cancer, which overall is quite rare. But sometimes men with testicular cancer present as having fertility problems. And then another relatively rare thing, but potentially concerning thing, would be a brain tumor that affects the man's pituitary gland, which is the hormone control center in our brain. And sometimes we find pituitary problems in men as they present with infertility.
I don't want to worry people. Those are fairly rare, you said.
That's correct. Yeah, it's quite rare that we find these harmful things. But really, much of the focus of the male fertility evaluation is on what the underlying cause or causes are, and if they are things that can be treated.
Now, we see in the news the Robert De Niro's of the world and Al Pacino's of the world becoming dads at a very advanced age. But aging can have impacts on fertility, I understand. What do we see there?
Yes, that's a very important point. It's good to, at some levels, it's sometimes good to see, what's going on in the overall world with fertility. But I think it's more the exception rather than the rule that men of advanced paternal age are looking to have kids. Historically, it was thought that that men can have kids until they're they're well into their 70s and 80s, which, as we see in some of these high profile folks, is possible. However, if you look at the impact of age and time on male fertility, men's overall fertility declines with age, number one. But number two, which I think is also important to keep in mind, is that the quality of men's sperm it does also decline over time. And what we're trying to figure out in a lot of areas of research is what potential impact advanced paternal age, meaning old men, what effect, if any, that has on the offspring as far as potential genetic abnormalities or health conditions that may be associated with an older man and older sperm.
We're talking about men's experiences with infertility and causes, and coming up, maybe some treatments with Dr. Daniel Williams, professor of urology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, an expert in male infertility. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Did you have a rocky road to fatherhood yourself? Have you undergone infertility treatment and you're willing to share that story with us? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences, your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about the experiences of men dealing with infertility, the effort to become a dad. Our guest is Dr. Daniel Williams, professor of urology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, an expert in male infertility. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. John is with us in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for this really, really needed topic. I was actually, my wife and I were struggling with fertility and found a late adult case of cystic fibrosis that I had already always had. And then that helped my brother and his family and my family have kids through IVF. And I'm wondering how common is that? And is that something that is looked at with male infertility as well?
Interesting, John. Dr. Williams, is that something you've come across?
Absolutely. That's a great question, John. Thank you for bringing that that topic up. So with cystic fibrosis, as you and your family are aware, you need to have two genes of cystic fibrosis to have the disease cystic fibrosis. So there are a number of men and women out there who carry one cystic fibrosis gene, but not the double gene, if you will, to have the disease cystic fibrosis. So a number of men who carry cystic fibrosis genes have certain abnormalities in the reproductive tract that cause blockages. So, for example, the vas deferens tube is a tube that carries the sperm through the reproductive tract. And a lot of men who have cystic fibrosis and who are carriers of cystic fibrosis can be missing those tubes. So their bodies are producing sperm, but they're just trapped inside. And so, as you stated, we can do what are called sperm retrieval procedures to get sperm from the man and use those sperm for treatment with in vitro fertilization. And so for men with that cystic fibrosis condition, there are treatment options most of the time to help them out.
John, thanks a lot for sharing that experience with us. We'll go now to Brooke, also in Eau Claire. Brooke, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to ask about?
So my significant other, he actually just started testosterone replacement. He's been dealing with low testosterone for quite a while. And they told us not to get pregnant while on testosterone. But I've read some conflicting information, and I wanted to know your suggestion.
Oh, interesting. So links between testosterone use, Dr. Williams, and a sperm production.
Yeah, thank you, Brooke, for that question. This is a very hot topic in the male fertility world and in the men's health world in general. In general, we're starting to see a rise in the number of men who are on testosterone treatments. There are a number of reasons for that. Sometimes it's just more of an awareness of it and a better detection of men with low testosterone. But it's a very, very important notion, the idea of testosterone treatments in men with low testosterone. So when men have low testosterone and symptoms from low testosterone, a lot of men do benefit from raising those levels. But if you give a man one of the number, there are many different types of testosterone treatments, but if you give a man testosterone, it does raise his level of testosterone. And most men do feel better going from low to normal. But one important thing that's oftentimes not discussed is that any external testosterone treatment can and does lower sperm production. And in some men, it lowers it down to zero, completely suppresses it. So if a man does have low testosterone, and depending on what the cause of that low testosterone is, if that man is trying to preserve his fertility, there are other treatments that can boost a man's own production of testosterone to help him feel better and to maintain his sperm production. That's a very good question and something that's not always fully understood by many providers and by folks undergoing these treatments. So thank you for that question.
Thanks for calling in, Brooke. Dr. Williams, We don't often talk about male infertility, as you said, in general. How about the emotional and mental health side of things for the patients you deal with? Is this something that people are even talking about?
Yeah, that's another great point. Thank you, Rob. So the fertility journey for most couples can be quite a stressful one. There can be a lot of highs and lows of the emotional journey of having trouble to get pregnant, the stress of being evaluated, what's found or not found during the evaluations. And kind of stereotypically, it was always thought that, men are tough and they can handle whatever's thrown at them. But we're starting to learn more and more about the emotional impact of a man being diagnosed with fertility problems. We know that, yes, the majority of the time, there is a female factor going on that's affecting a couple's fertility. But about a third of the time, it's solely the man's issue with a problem with the sperm or sperm production. And for a lot of men, that can be a very devastating blow emotionally to them. We do see a number of men develop depression after being diagnosed with infertility issues. We see a number of men who develop sexual dysfunction after they're diagnosed or while they're being evaluated. And for many couples, it puts a significant stress on the couple's emotional well-being and relationships. And so this is something that more and more, we're with just more and more awareness of the male fertility issues that men are and couples are understanding. But yes, it can be quite an emotional time for couples and for men struggling with male fertility.
Dr. Williams, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
You bet. A pleasure to be here. And thank you to you and your team, Rob.
That's Dr. Daniel Williams, Professor, Residency Program Director, and Vice Chair for Education for the Department of Urology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us today for a look at men's experiences of infertility. Now, a year ago this weekend, the U.S. Supreme Court issued its historic opinion that overturned decades of abortion policy. In Wisconsin, an 1800s-era law took effect, immediately banning effectively all abortions in the state. As Bridget Bowden reports, 1 year after the Dobbs decision, things look quite a bit different for Wisconsin on both sides of the issue.
On a recent morning near Madison, Planned Parenthood nurse Heather Ellingson is packing up her car. Every week for the last year, she's made the two-hour drive to the Planned Parenthood clinic in Waukegan, Illinois. It normally takes about 2 hours, except when the weather doesn't cooperate.
During the winter, there were some days where, wow, just the weather was a bit brutal.
For Ellingson, making the trip just makes sense.
Because most of these are our patients. So many people, patients from Wisconsin, we see in Waukegan. And had the Dobbs decision not happened, we would have been seeing them here in Wisconsin.
And recent data from Illinois bears that out. The Planned Parenthood clinics there have seen a 54% increase in abortion patients since last summer, many of them coming from other states. And that means another fixture of abortion clinics is also making the trip, protesters.
And so we came from Wisconsin to Illinois to try to reach out to women who are abortion-minded.
That's Ann Franchek of Milwaukee. She's been protesting at abortion clinics for close to 40 years. Now she comes down twice a week with anti-abortion posters and models of fetuses.
And I put this in a baby stroller to make it more real that these are babies.
Jenny Higgins is a professor of obstetrics and gynecology at UW-Madison and the director of the Collaborative for Reproductive Equity. She says despite all of the people traveling to states where abortion is still legal, the numbers haven't evened out.
What we've seen is while less restrictive states such as Illinois and Minnesota have seen increases in the number of abortions, those increases do not make up for the decreases in restrictive states such as Wisconsin.
It's too soon to know how the ban is affecting birth rates in the state. But Higgins says when abortion clinics in Appleton and Green Bay closed, they went up, and she expects we'll see the same thing now.
So I can say with a lot of certainty that we will expect slight but significant increases in birth rates in the Wisconsin counties that have lost the most access to care.
Although abortion access has been reduced significantly in the state, not much has changed for some Wisconsinites. Before the ban, Wisconsin had 4 abortion clinics located in Madison, Milwaukee, and Sheboygan. Cheryl Thede is the president of the Options Fund, a group that provides financial assistance for abortion seekers in northwestern Wisconsin. They were already helping people get over the border, she says. What's changed is the pressure on out-of-state clinics.
The states where it's legal now are carrying the burden of people from the other states. Mm-hmm. And so there is a little bit more of a lead time with appointments in Minnesota and Illinois as people from Texas and Louisiana and all sorts of states are traveling.
The future of abortion in Wisconsin may come down to the state Supreme Court, which will now have a liberal majority after Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Janet Protasiewicz was elected to an open seat in April. Matt Sandy is the legislative director of Pro-Life Wisconsin. He remembers celebrating the Dobbs decision a year ago, but doesn't believe anti-abortion work is done.
Yes, we've been abortion-free for a year. But abortion could be coming back in the near future.
Back in the car, Planned Parenthood nurse Heather Ellingson is also looking toward the future, but she hopes abortion access will be restored.
I was present when we had to close our door, and I would like to be there and swing that door right back open and be like, nope, we are ready, waiting. We are capable. We've kept up our skills and welcome our patients right back the very minute.
It's expected the court could take up the abortion case as soon as August. Bridget Bowden, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, chronic wasting disease has been a growing problem for years in Wisconsin's deer herd. Check out the latest news about the spread of the disease and efforts to control it. And there have been air quality problems in communities around Wisconsin, including an ongoing advisory for ozone right now for a lot of the state. It's coming from smoke from Canadian wildfires. Check out the science behind the smoke and what it means for our health. And we want to hear from you. Is this affecting your life, your decisions to go outside? Are you at risk because of poor air quality? Let us know about it. You can email right now, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Then join the conversation that's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.